Welcome, everybody. I'd like to try to get everybody seated pretty quickly so we can proceed with the session. Administratively, this is going to be a little bit of a tag team. I should also remember right now to have the recording started for the session. So the way we're going to do this, my name is Greg Rattray. I'm ICANN's Chief Internet Security Advisor, and this working group kind of proceeds from a staff perspective under my purview as the security person with a security team. However, it's a community working group. Unfortunately, the two co-chairs of the working group, Michael Pallage and Christopher Venn, were both unavailable. Timing of this session related to the time in North America is not good. So the way we're going to go through what the work that's been done by this working group at this point is I am going to kick off the session, and we're going to have Andy Welch, who's really been the driver in terms of the ICANN staff. Andy's with the KPMG team that supports ICANN in putting this program together, both the work that was done over the summer and was released in the fall as part of Draft Applicant Guidebook 3, the concept paper for a high security zone verification program, as well as supporting Michael and Christoph in the work that's been done in the working group. So with that, I need to make sure I cover a few administrative things. First, I very much want to welcome everybody here in Nairobi. We've got the biggest room. We have the full conference room. There's probably, 30 people in this room total. We're getting quite an echo. as we do this. But I also want to welcome those from all the remote sites in there who have dialed in to participate. Yuri Ito, to my left, will also be helping orchestrate this, and I will actually have to depart early at about 3 o'clock during the session, and Yuri will help work with Craig Schwartz, who's running the Adobe Connect remote participation room. So it's very much going to be a tag team effort. Administratively, I need to remind participants that the call in the Adobe chat room will be recorded and posted to the high security TLD information page in the next 24 hours. Regarding Adobe, I want to please remind folks to use the click on the icon that allows you to raise your hands. That will allow raise your hand in the Adobe Connect chat room. That allows Craig to identify who wants to make a comment, as well as the order in which hands were raised. And I do want to remind everybody, there is a work in progress paper on this working group's efforts published on the ICANN public comment forum, so you can look at that and make public comment in addition to obviously participating in this meeting this afternoon. I'll make sure I covered the full gamut of administrative issues. And that public comment period is open until 8 April. So with that, again, I'll kick off this session. What is the HSTLD program? And, listed here on the slide, I'll just read the goal statement. The goal of the High Security Zone Top-Level Domain Advisory Group is to bring together community representatives to evaluate the viability of a voluntary program supporting control standards and incentives that could potentially be adopted to provide an enhanced level of trust and security over the baseline registration authority controls. So there is the kind of purpose statement for the group. Where it came from, Andy's going to go over the kind of origins of the group a little bit in a little bit of depth, but this is one of the efforts supporting closing out the overarching issues related to the new GTLD effort. Though this group in particular is not necessarily limiting the development of the high security TLD program solely to the new GTLD. So I just wanted to provide some of that context. It is designed to provide a structured approach to improve internet community trust and, to help improve the overall security of domains registered within the participating TLDs. Again, at this point, it's envisioned that it's a generic program that could be applied by the range of TLD types currently and in the future will exist. So with that, I'd like to turn the presentation again over to Andy Welch, who's been the principal staffer behind this effort, and he'll lead us through the slides. Andy, my While there are a number of slides, my goal would be that you get that done within 30 to 40 minutes to allow the remainder, the other half of the session, to be a vigorous discussion with the people both here in Nairobi and remotely. Andy, are you ready to go?
Well, I am, Greg. Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
We can hear you fine.
All right, fantastic. Thank you. And welcome, everybody. Thanks once again to all the people at ICANN, to the HSCLD Advisory Group, and to the co-chairs, both Mike and Christoph, for helping us forward. So I'm going to dig in a little bit and talk about, after the goal statement, so what's the problem that the HSCLD program is really, at a broad sense, attempting to tackle. Craig, if you could just go to the next slide, we'll talk a little bit about the problem statement. And similar to the goal statement, the high security CLD group has come up with a problem statement, and it essentially says certain individuals and organizations have sought to exploit vulnerabilities within the DNS technology and the business practices of certain registration authorities for inappropriate and or illegal purposes. The exploitation of these vulnerabilities has threatened the security and stability of the Internet and negatively impacted the trust users have when using the Internet. The next portion of this slide and the next slide really go into the interested parties, but this program really is all about trying to deal or provide one component of a suite of solutions to help deal with that problem. Obviously acknowledging that this program can't solve the program problem entirely, but it is a component of items that really is focused on trying to help out with that problem. So there's several interested parties. Registrants would like to be sure that the name they register doesn't get hijacked through registrar or registry or their own account compromise. That includes DNS, who is, and so forth. Registrars would like to be able to give reasonable guarantees to registrants that, number one, won't happen because they have good controls in place. So in order to do so, they require both registrant and registry cooperation. That's a real key point, and you'll see sort of throughout the slides, one of the things that the HSCLD program does try to do is, at least now in concept, we're working on developing a control structure that works at both registry and registrant levels and sort of tries to get that cooperation written down. Registries would also like, number one, and this requires the cooperation of registrant and registrar. So you can see we're trying to build a little chain here with the problem statement. And finally, end users would like to know that when they type in a given domain name or navigate from a bookmark, that they go to the right domain and that the DNS, et cetera, has not been hijacked. And they'd also like to understand that a domain name registered with a particular TLD is subject to registration standards, policies, and procedures that are aimed at reducing malicious conduct by such registrars. So that gives the package of where we are as a group in our draft development of problem statement. So that being said, who might volunteer for this program? And when we talk about who might volunteer, we're not talking about who might volunteer to be part of the advisory group. With this one, we're talking about who might volunteer to consume some of the material, the control material, and perhaps certification or report card material. We'll talk about that in just a minute, that this program creates. Well, there's a number of them, and this is a little speculative, but probably TLD operators wishing to establish and advertise an established control environment. So we're trying to provide an avenue not only to establish an agreed control environment, but also to advertise that the control environment's been established. Or perhaps TLD operators that may not wish to advertise their control environment to the public, but wish to build an internal control model based on community standards. So the second one's not quite as intuitive. It's really all about building a model or providing a model that can be consumed by registry or TLD operators for controls, regardless of whether or not they want to advertise it through the program or not. So as Craig mentioned a few minutes ago, we're going to talk just a second about the origins of the HSCLD Advisory Group, really sort of focusing on security and controls is part of the ICANN new GTLD process, as Greg had mentioned a minute ago. The interesting thing is that this program, as he had also mentioned, is not totally focused on just the new GTLDs. In fact, we're trying in all of our drafts and literature to really make it clear that any TLD, new or existing, could make use of the output of the program. In Applicant Guidebook 2 and in comments during and after the Sydney meeting, financial services community and numerous ICANN ESAC reports highlighted the desire for greater security controls. So this really sort of initiated a bit of a concept focus and coming up with sort of ideas and concept that we might take on, we as sort of ICANN might take on to deal with that highlight. In Applicant Guidebook 3, there was initial concept paper published that was titled A Model for High Security Zone Verification Program, and that was really the first concept. From that, in November of last year, a call for volunteers to serve on an advisory group to continuing the developing initial concept went out, and that was really the genesis of the High Security TLD Advisory Group. And today, we've gathered volunteers. We can go to the next slide. To continue to develop or improve upon concepts introduced in the original concept paper, to gather community input and feedback on the proposed program, to identify issues with the program, to propose potential solutions to those issues as they're raised, and then finally to create a recommendation paper ultimately that is improved upon from the original concept. So that's sort of the high-level tasks that we're focused on.
And
the members of the advisory.
Andy, it's Greg. I'm trying to follow. I want to make sure I know which slide you're on. And did you just announce? Okay, members.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm on slide 8. I'll announce as we move through going forward. Members of the advisory group include a lot of different interested parties, registries, registrars, internet security companies, financial institutions, law enforcement, legal professionals, knowledgeable individuals and ICANN staff, and as Greg had mentioned a minute ago, we've got two co-chairs, Michael Pelage and Christophe Revere. They are both active members of the group and help us guide the group in our weekly meetings and in publishing material and so forth. Can we move to slide 9, Craig? Okay. So all of that being said, what are sort of the key components that are being discussed right now with the HSTLD Advisory Group? There are really three key components at the moment that are being focused on. That's not to say that we're limited to these three. That's just sort of what we're focusing on at the moment. There's an effort to look at control standards. There's an effort beginning to materialize to think about how we will demonstrate or how the TLDs will demonstrate the control standard. And then finally, how the control standards would be published, so publication of which TLDs are participating and what exactly is going on with those TLDs from a publication perspective. So the control standards are, we moved on to slide 10. The control standards are really defined through principles, objectives, criteria, and illustrative control. They're established through drafting efforts with the HSTLD Advisory Group, and they're available for community review and comment. We actually have a process, it's a draft process in and of itself that we're putting together in the advisory group to release what we're calling snapshot updates, and the first one is actually available for public comment now. It's when you go to the public comment site off of ICANN's link and click on the HSTLD portion of public comments. It's our first initial snapshot release, and we anticipate coming out with additional snapshot releases as we develop content. The demonstration of controls, there's really sort of two concepts that are out there in draft now. The original concept paper had a concept of certification seal type of approach, so a participating TLD would be able to get some level of seal that they'd be able to advertise that would qualify them as a high security TLD rather. The advisory group itself came up with another concept. It's called the report card concept, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but that's sort of the most recent development within the advisory group. So the control standards really are the foundation to the program. The current draft of control standards actually includes, as I mentioned before, controls for registry, registrar, and registrant. The group is actually drafting the controls right now. That's really sort of the just in-flight status of where we are with those, with that effort. We have four principles that we're working off of. Three of the principles were introduced in the concept paper, and the fourth principle is a newer principle that was just introduced through the efforts of the advisory group. The principles really form the foundation of the HSTLD's efforts, and I'll quickly read principle number one. The principle is that the registry maintains effective controls to provide reasonable assurance that the security, availability, and confidentiality of systems and information assets supporting critical registry, IT, and business operations are maintained by performing the following. So the following are defining and communicating performance objectives, policies, and standards for system and information asset security, availability, confidentiality, and privacy. Utilizing procedures, people, software, data, and infrastructure to achieve defined objectives in accordance with established policies and standards. And monitoring the system and information assets and taking action to achieve compliance with defined objectives, policies, and standards. That's a long-winded principle. It does cover a lot of ground, and it really forms the foundation of principle number one. Craig, can we move on to slide 12? Principle number two is the registry maintains effective controls to provide reasonable assurance that the processing of core registry functions are authorized, accurate, complete, and performed in a timely manner in accordance with established policies and standards. The identity of participating entities is established and authenticated. So that kind of breaks down specific components of controls within the registry again. Principle number three is that the registry shall maintain effective controls to provide reasonable assurance that the processing of core registrar functions by its registrars are authorized, accurate, complete, and performed in a timely manner in accordance with established policies and standards. So principle three kind of moves from that registry level and then down to the registrar level. So as I was talking about earlier, you can kind of see that we're building a little chain of controls here with the current draft. We move on to slide 13, talk very quickly about principle four. This is our newest principle, and it's the last link in the chain, if you will, and it's about registrants. So registrants in the high security zone are expected to maintain current and accurate information and to commit to refrain from activities designed to confuse or mislead the Internet-using public. So work continues on the evaluation and development of the principles, objectives, criteria, and illustrative controls, and this really is the sort of stuff that we're really focusing on as a group right now and will be for the coming weeks. We move on to slide 14. The next thing that we're thinking about is the demonstration of controls. This is very important. So once the controls are established and presumably a TLD that would like to participate begins to actually use the controls and implement them in their environment, we need to provide a basis for them to participate and to prove that they're participating. There are really two draft models that are out there now. One of them is the certification seal, and one of them is a self-assessment report card. Each model has some advantages and disadvantages, and one of the things that we're talking about right now as a group is that the models aren't mutually exclusive. You can envision perhaps a third model where we do a report card perhaps first and a seal as a component of continued development, although that's not currently listed as a third option yet. It's something that has been discussed. We move to slide 15? Right? Thanks. So certification. Certification, what is it? It's defined within the original concept paper. Within the original concept paper, it's defined as verification. It establishes the controls necessary to achieve certification. So a component of certification itself is sort of saying, what precisely does an entity have to do to become certified? What controls does it have to comply with? It also requires that there are approved assessors to measure that the certification controls are in place, and to provide a control assessment report to whatever entity grants the seal. So that's an interesting bullet. We sort of envisioned two separate entities and three actors in total. So one actor would be the TLD that's seeking to get the high security seal. The other actor would be the approved assessors that are measuring the controls at the TLD. And then the third actor is an entity that would grant the seal to the first actor, to the TLD. The seal would be published for community advertisement and review. And per the concept paper, regular reassessment of controls by an approved assessor would be necessary to continue to maintain the seal. All of that is sort of detailed in the concept paper for those that are interested. So page 16, we get into this new concept of report card. As I mentioned, we recently introduced the report card option as a group. With this option, TLD registry operators would self-assess the implementation of HSTLD control standards. And they would do so on a report card that is essentially a matrix of HSTLD control standards against the participating TLD registry operators. And for each TLD operator, each individual control is graded, if you will, as you might view on a report card. If you move on to slide 17, this talks about the initial draft report card grading system. We'd envision sort of a, and there are five possible grades. One grade is the white blank box grade. Registry operator provides no data, so of course it's blank. A yellow shaded box would be a registry operator has self-certified that they've got a control in place, so that's they're attesting themselves that their control is in place. And then there's a green box, and the green box is either half or all full. With a half full, a third party, not the TLD, has verified the registry's compliance with a specified control element at a point in time. And then a full green box is that a third party has verified the registry's compliance with a control element over a period of time. So the control has been observed to be operating over a period, which is a little bit more assurance than just looking at it one time. And then finally, the bad one, the red shaded box, would be if a registry is found to be in non-compliance with a control that was previously reported as yellow or green. The real sort of draft thought there is that potentially a violation of a registry agreement may have compliance implications. That, you know, that's still being developed. It's up on our wiki site. You can see all of these report card options up there. And again, we're still sort of working through that and how that might mechanically work. Slide 18. So the last piece is sort of how do we publish the participating TLDs? So part of the challenge is that if a TLD is making use of the controls and has them in their environment and operating, we need to provide a method for public advertisement of the assertion of control so the public can know that the TLD has the controls in place and what controls are in place and what their status is. This is how the value is established, through community understanding and acknowledgement of participating TLDs. In general, publication could occur on individual sites and systems within a participating TLD. So you could envision that a high-security TLD would enable sites within that TLD to publish that they were indeed a high-security TLD and provide either the seal or the report card or whatever other mechanism we develop. Some of the thoughts we've discussed is that it could be integrated into a centralized dashboard. You could envision that some group would have a centralized dashboard of all of these participating TLDs so that consumers could go to the dashboard and really see all of them in one place. And authenticity of the certification or report card could be validated using a centralized system of record. It's important to really provide an independent or an entity independent of the TLD itself to validate that the certification or the report card was indeed valid, so that they couldn't be spoofed or couldn't easily be spoofed or just copied and pasted onto anybody's website. Using a system of record, we can sort of get around that risk. We move on to 19. We're coming up on about a half hour. Greg, I think I've hit the time pretty well. I had to try to guide us through as quickly as possible. This last slide here, we talk about next steps for the HSTLD program. So today, obviously, we're further discussing the concept paper and the development snapshot. For the group, we're continuing to evaluate and develop the principles, objectives, and criteria. We're seeking to obtain feedback on the report card and certification models and all of the other draft material that are part of the artifacts that we're creating. And we're trying to identify additional program components, assessor requirements, marketing and awareness, and so forth. And finally, we're hoping to contribute an HSTLD option paper to the next version of the draft applicant guidebook. For those that are interested in much more detail than I've given in this very, very, very brief brief, we've also included sort of our HSTLD main page. You can see the link down there at the bottom of our presentation. Off of this page, you can get all of our weekly meeting recordings. You can get the latest materials that we release. And you can get to our wiki page where we're actually doing just-in-time development, so you can see all of our material as the group posts it for review and comment and works through the program. So with that, I move to page 20. Thank you very much, and I'm going to open up for questions.
So thank you very much, Andy. You hit the time exactly, and that was well done, and I clearly heard here in Nairobi. So we're in some ways going to kind of have to do this on the fly. This is the first meeting where remote participation has been an essential element of how ICANN has been doing its work. So, again, to my left, I have Yuri Ito. She's working with Craig in the Adobe Connect room. I think, Craig, if this works from your perspective, just go back and forth if there's a large number of people queued up both here and in the Adobe Connect room. So if I could take hands from people here, I'll probably, and I've got one already, I got two. It would be useful, actually, if you think you're going to have a question, obviously you can come up with one at a later date, but how many questions do we have burning in the room right now? So we got just two here. Craig, do you have hands up in the Adobe Connect room?
Yeah, so far we have one, Rick Wilhelm.
Okay, so why don't we go first with Lee here, and then we'll go to you, Craig, and then back here.
Lee Williams with the Financial Services Roundtable. Andy, Greg, Yuri, everyone, we from the financial services industry very much appreciate all of the energy that's gone into this initiative. I think we've made enormous strides over the course of this work. We still have, I think, just one concern which may not belong in the working group at the implementation stage. It's probably more a policy question, and that's in the inclusion of voluntary as part of the charter. We still think that at least for financial services, the activities are sensitive enough that some of these requirements should be mandatory. We'll work that in other fora. We'll work that in the policy veins.
Can you speak slow? We have a comment.
Sorry. We'll work that in other fora, including the policy threads at ICANN. We'll work it with regulators, and ultimately some of it may have to be worked in the marketplace where we press one another to adopt as high a security standard as possible. One comment, I think, as we look at the demonstration issues, there are two models that I think we might look to somewhat inform our choices of report card or certification. And I don't know that one is better or worse than the other, but some others have begun that work. One is we sponsor a program called the Shared Assessments Program, which works on a report card model. Companies, about 70 now, do a self-assertion, and then they have an independent check of that assertion. which at the end of the day checks each element but stops short of having a binary approval or disapproval. So we get detail that gets checked, but nobody is saying you are or aren't secure. One model. Another model is adopted by the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, the 21 countries that have a Pacific shoreline. In security and privacy, they're too looking at something that very closely models standards, controls, and a published list. They too have first a self-assessment, an assertion, and then a check by an independent authority, and then ultimately publish a list of those now who have met a threshold. So they do have ultimately an approval process and a binary judgment on whether people are or aren't respecting the APEC privacy standard, which is actually an APEC privacy and security standard. So through our involvement in the working group, we'll make sure that we get whatever lessons we can out of those two models. And again, I'd like to thank everyone for all that they invest in making this initiative a success.
Thank you, Lee, and thank you for BITS' continuing participation in the effort. Craig, over to you, and I think Rick Wilhelm was the name I heard wanting to make a comment from the remote participation.
Sure. Thanks, Greg. A couple, I don't know if this is one or two, but as far as the assessment, has there been thought given to just leveraging out-of-the-box existing standards for things like PCI in order to get it easier to get the program off the ground? And on a related front, perhaps a complementary question is that as we talk about assessors, what sort of work has been done in describing and identifying the criteria by which assessors themselves will be certified?
I'm going to take a quick one, and then, Annie, I'm going to turn it over to you. But certainly mapping, you know, existing efforts that would be applicable to this sort of control regime, and then, you know, in implementation, thinking about how to utilize those existing efforts is part of the overall game plan. And, again, Andy, if you want to amplify on that, that's good, as well as on the issue of the selection of assessors and in certifying the assessors. So, Andy Welch, over to you.
Thanks, Greg. So, Rick, excellent questions. First, on the existing models, one of the things I would encourage you and everyone to do is take a look at the HS and actually see the controls that we are developing as we're developing them. You'll notice that as the draft is moving, we're basing the draft on, right now we've got some ISO IEC 27000, got some stuff from the applicant guide, and ECERT. PCI is not in there yet, but I expect that we develop the controls, or as we discover that existing draft controls have overlap. So that's definitely something the group is looking at and something that we're using to actually create our existing control draft model. On the subject of assessors, the group is really just starting to talk about, so how do we qualify assessors? And there's some interesting concepts that are going around. They aren't yet drafted for review on the wiki page. They hopefully will be shortly. The idea is there's a couple of things we've been looking at. So first is, do we come up with assessor standards that our assessors are measured against? That's one option. Another option might be to say, you know, there's a whole lot of great programs out there already. Do we grandfather in assessors that are part of those programs? And that begs the question, so what programs would we base that on? But that's another option. And then the third option might be a mixture of the two. So we are thinking about it. We don't have published bill yet to look. Check that out shortly.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. The one thing I'd offer, and perhaps it's self-evident, but the choice of assessment methods and the choice of certifying assessors are sort of a self-referential discussion.
Right.
Okay, we have another question here in the room in Nairobi.
Hi, folks. Simon McKellar, nominet.uk. Firstly, I just want to say we strongly support the work of this group. We think it's a great opportunity to take a look at security issues we face, so we're very supportive of that. The question I have is, if we have a situation where we create a high security zone and it operates very well and passes its assessment, and then the registry gets into a situation where actually it then fails an assessment, is the group proposing that some kind of takedown mechanism? And then probably as a second to that question, if a registrar or a registrant failed their obligations under the HSTLD, what would the actions be? And does this group, then, is it proposing a mandate for takedowns effectively?
So, you know, my sense is really the answer at the core is no, because as currently constructed, this is a voluntary program, so it's really a mechanism for transparency. So if someone fails to meet either a specific control, right, in a scorecard fashion, or a standard is created where they actually fail and overall, you know, fail to continue to be a high security zone, you know, there would be no specific punitive measures built into the program. I say that with the one proviso, though, if that in its contract with ICANN, let's say, a given new TLD decided to specify as part of performance compliance with this program specifically, then obviously there would be a legal basis for action in that TLD. So that would be my, you know, current thinking on the actual, you know, punitive measures that might take if something was not to meet standards.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I think we at Nominate have been involved in takedown activity quite recently, and I think we feel that some of the measures this group are proposing would help and make that whole process quite a lot more transparent.
Okay. Thank you, Simon. Andy, did you have any amplifying thoughts on the question that Simon raised?
Yeah. There's really two possible options for consequence. One of the options would be there's three. If we define the scorecard and the certification options as distinct, then, for instance, the scorecard has the model where one of the consequences could be you get a red in your scorecard and everyone in the universe can see that red, and that's a bad thing. Certification consequence would be your certification is removed. That's independent, potentially, of the decision for any kind of takedown process. I think Greg is right in terms of the current, although it's still, you know, very much draft, I think they're two independent types of things. Could they be linked? Yes. I don't think there's a desire at this point to do that, but that's obviously still in development.
Okay, with that, we actually have one more in the room, but I think we have one more in remote participation, so I'm going to turn it over to remote participation where I think...
Yeah, we have Mikey O'Connor here in Reston.
Mikey O'Connor. Yep. So Mikey O'Connor.
Hi, gang. This is Mikey. I sort of want to bring up a point for those of you in the audience where this is the first time you've seen this stuff. This presentation makes it feel like there's considerable unanimity in the group, that it's pretty baked, that it's, you know, it's very clear that this is what we're going to do. And I just want to make it clear to everybody that there's considerable disagreement on our list. I refer you to the list. You can go through the wiki page to get to it. There are a lot of us who are scratching our heads over this and not sure that this is even a viable approach. And so I just want to kind of correct the impression that this is all baked and ready to go into the DAG. I really don't think it's quite as baked as it looks. That's my comment.
Thanks, Mikey. That's fair. I mean, it is a working group, and this is an update of a work in progress, and no specific commitments have been made in terms of, you know, when the group will be comfortable publishing formal results. So we have we still have one in the room, and I believe I will read a question from the public or the remote participation after the question in the room.
Thanks. Brian Cute with Affilius. I am a participant on the advisory group. And thank you, Mikey, for those comments, because there is some disagreement about whether this is a viable approach. It seems to be pushing in the direction of a one-size-fits-all solution, and I personally have questions about whether that will best serve the community of new TLD applicants and registries. Certainly working with BITS has given us specific inputs about what their types of institutions will require in terms of security, and you heard the comment that having it mandatory would be preferable. But what we really need to hear, in my view, is from applicants and from folks who may be clients or customers of high security TLD registry operators. It would really be useful for us to get inputs from you about what you think your security requirements are, because while this is presently structured as voluntary, it is going in the direction of a one-size-fits-all solution, and I personally have strong reservations about whether that will be relatively useful for the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. I am going to read the question from the remote participation, and then, Andy, I think I'm going to ask you to respond. So with that, let me take a quick read. It's from Eric Bruner-Williams, and there's a little bit of interpretation I think I'm going to have to do here, but if a high-security TLD exists and some high-security property is asserted to exist in registrars accessing that high-security zone, then equal access becomes conditional if decertification is possible. So, Eric, if I've mischaracterized or misread any of that, please hit us in the chat room. You know, there's a lot of conditionality in that long sentence. Andy, why don't you take a shot at least your perspective on where the working group might be on that question.
Okay. And Eric, I'm trying to work through just to make sure I understand. The concern is equal access becoming conditional. I think I see where you're coming from. So this I think gets to the point we were trying to raise, that certification and or the scorecard can be independent and currently in the current thinking are independent of takedown and the takedown process. So those are two sort of independent actions. They could be linked or they could be independent, and that vision or even that dialogue is really, really early draft. So I think I'd mischaracterize saying any real work has been done there, only to acknowledge that they're different events. Does that, Eric, answer sort of what you were getting at?
Andy, this is Mike Fallage. If I could try to help perhaps interject on this subject matter. One of the things with the current policy development process is the requirement that all registries make their registry open to all ICANN-accredited registrars. Historically, however, when you looked at the sponsored registries were permitted to have additional criteria and select which registrars they used. So I think his question here is, if in fact a registry has a registrar that is not following these specifications, would they have the ability to, if you will, de-accredit them and no longer provide them access to the zone, and in fact, or to that registry? And this kind of builds on some of the points that were raised by myself in the public forum this morning about single registrant TLDs and those potential security issues. So I think that is the question that Eric was answering or was asking.
Right, and we really haven't covered that section of policy at all, and I think, Mike, you'd probably back up on that. We haven't really covered that, Eric. So I think I'd be sort of speaking out of turn if I gave a draft answer on that.
So this is, again, Mike Pelage speaking. I think the approach here, and we've discussed this before, is there are some issues I think that do have legal significance, and it probably would be best for the group in the next week or two to identify what those issues are and to get those questions or concerns to general counsel and to get feedback so that we can continue to move forward with the benchmarks that we've set for the group.
Thank you, Michael and Andy. So we have one more person queued up here. There's no one else in the – no more questions in the chat room. Though, Lee, I will mention there was the discussion and an answer about what BITS is and then a question about, you know, is it U.S. only? I think if it's if you'd like to, I'd like to also offer you the opportunity to talk to who you've collaborated with in the, you know, the banking and finance input to this this process. So the question in the room.
Hi there. Hi, guys. This is Evan Leibovich. I'm one of the two people in the group from At Large who are hopefully holding the fort on the public interest in this thing. I wanted to address a couple of things. Number one, the question on takedown. If the purpose of this whole thing is to build build on public confidence and make the public more confident in the idea of having a high security zone, it would almost strike me that some kind of process of takedown would be absolutely necessary. If you have a process where somebody has certified that they're going to act in a certain way, they stop acting in that way, then something has to be taken away in the kind of either seal or nomenclature or color of the light or whatever have you. I think that's almost a given if this is to instill public confidence and maintain some trust in this. But also in the question about the one-size-fits-all, I don't think that can be taken as a given. I think we've already been talking about the idea of using the same controls, the same objectives, but applying them at different levels of difficulty. So you could have different steps that somebody that wanted to meet the objectives as a self-definition could do so. Somebody that wanted to do this as a matter of getting the independent verification could do so. There could be multiple levels of difficulty, multiple levels of applying the same objectives and controls. So I think it is absolutely possible to use the same program and not have it as a one-size-fits-all, but allow different PLDs to come in at different levels as they need to.
So I think we've had a good discussion from a couple perspectives on multiple, you know, a more differentiated approach than a single one-size-fits-all. Back to the top of the question, and again, this is Greg Rattray's personal opinion now, you know, not an ICANN position about where the group comes out, on the notion of takedown. You know, my strong sense is that procedures for takedown, you know, that are effective would be one of the sorts of controls, you know, that would be instituted in one of the gradable criteria, so that if you did not have or execute those procedures, you know, properly, you would get a red mark at least against those sets of controls, providing some transparency out to user land, you know, about which zones had effective takedown or not. But again, that's my personal perspective. Andy, you know, to the extent to which that's been discussed in the working group, or Michael, either your personal perspectives or the group's perspective would be useful.
Mike, do you want to chime in, or?
I just stepped away, and I heard my name. So could you repeat the question, Greg?
We were talking about the thought of rapid takedown or takedown of a TLD that's found to be out of control compliance. And, Greg, if I misrepresent you, please forgive me. But I think Greg's personal opinion was that it would be the program would be gravitating more toward transparency and grading or certification than it would be toward takedown. And he was kind of asking what our sort of personal opinions were.
Okay, personal opinion. I think if you're talking about taking down an entire zone, that probably raises some security and stability issues there. So again, the thing of, you know, one bad apple perhaps ruining the whole bushel. You know, I don't think, though, that statement should not reflect negatively on enforcement and compliance being very important here. I think one of the reasons people have invested so much time in this working or advisory group to date is because they believe in the process. So, again, I think this goes to some of the issues we're going to have to forward to the general counsel to get some feedback on, so that we as a group can make sure that the viability of what we recommend is implementable.
Yeah, very well stated, Mike. So even from my perspective, I think that's very draft.
Sorry, Andy.
Oh, sorry, Greg.
Okay,
go ahead,
there's just a point of clarification by the person who asked the question.
Seven again. I think it's also worth remembering that since there's a lot of belief that this should be a voluntary program, the term takedown might be a bit charged and might not be appropriate here. If there's not compliance in a voluntary program, the worst that could happen is that you're no longer in compliance with the voluntary program. It doesn't mean you get taken down from operating.
Yeah, back to our earlier discussion about sanctions for not meeting the standards in the program. What I'd like to do, Simon, do you have a question?
Just a quick one, actually. I just want to touch on something that Brian said and also Evan said about one time fits all, if that's okay. With my CC hat on, I'd love to see a flavor of this that we could apply, and it might be a lofty aim, but a flavor of this that we could apply to a CC to say that a CC is a trusted domain as well, particularly in terms of instilling confidence in e-commerce sites and so forth, and certainly in terms of working with our colleagues in the UK Police Force in helping us. So that very much have an interest in looking at a solution that we could apply at different levels.
Thank you, Simon. And, you know, you guys have become engaged in the working group, and I'm sure that will be a – I hope that will be a productive portion of that participation. Gary, do you see anything more in the chat room?
No, there was some comment that could not hear the microphone.
And I'll comment on this.
Yeah, Simon, you might want to repeat that CC TLD comment. There was a comment that you cannot
apparently one of the participants remotely did not hear your comments, Simon, so maybe just a brief reiteration of it.
Well, sorry, folks, you didn't hear that. Just saying that we would love to have a different flavor of this that we could apply to a CC domain, possibly, that would instill confidence in people. It may not be the full HSTLD that you might use for a finance zone, but it might be something that you can apply at a CC level that would instill confidence in people, as, for example, the UK being a good place to do business online.
Thank you, Simon. And back to the clarifying point, in the chat room there was a discussion of what BITS was that was answered in the chat room, and whether it's a U.S.-only focused organization. Knowing that BITS had collaborated with others, I thought I'd give Lee the opportunity to describe the set of players that BITS has been working with and providing input.
Thank you, Greg. I should have been more clear about the entities for whom I was speaking. It's Lee Williams. I run the technology group at the Financial Services Roundtable. That includes two organizations, BITS and the Financial Services Technology Consortium. They have as members about 100 large institutions, large enough that virtually all of them are global players operating not just in the U.S. and often not even primarily in the U.S., but around the world. By my last count, 20 of them are headquartered outside the U.S. We also have two other local associations out of Washington that have been very deeply involved in this work. One is the Financial Services Information Sharing and Analysis Center, and the other is the American Bankers Association. I think I can speak comfortably for all four of those. There are four other associations that have joined with us in this work from around the world. They are the UK Payments Institute, the International Banking Federation, the Australian Bankers Association, and the Canadian Bankers Association. And each of them at a different level has collaborated with us, may have written a letter endorsing some of the results. We, from the very start, have welcomed others' participation. So if there are people from our industry or from any community that touches our industry from anywhere in the world, we would love to have them involved in our efforts here and certainly hope that they will be actively involved in the working group.
Thank you, Lee. So unfortunately, I'm going to have to take my leave. So I need to work with the ICANN staff supporting this in remote participation. What I believe would be most useful, Andy, do you have enough visibility into the Adobe Connect room to know who's raising their hand and work with Craig in queuing up the questions?
Yeah, I think we can do that.
Yeah, we're set on this end as well.
Okay, so you two take the lead on coordinating that. Yuri's role will be to make sure that she queues up the people here in Nairobi in conjunction with you, again, trying to go back and forth between remote participation and people here in Nairobi. And, unfortunately, I have to take your leave for the moment. I may be back before 3:30, though I imagine this will be done before then. Thanks, everybody.
So, Andy, this is Craig speaking. From my perspective, it looks like the queue right now is Rick Wilhelm, then Mikey O'Connor, then Michael Pelage.
Yeah, on the that's what I see on the Adobe Connect as well.
Okay, so I'm going to turn the mic over to Rick Wilhelm.
Thanks, Craig. So a little bit earlier, there was a discussion where some of these things are violated, and we were talking about, I thought I heard somebody say, take down the TLD. And now I haven't been, I'll admit that I haven't been a participant, but I wanted to clarify, are we talking about taking a name out of a TLD, sort of like a takedown that happens at COM, you know, whenever someone complains about phishing, or are we talking about taking down the whole TLD? Because that would seem to be awfully disruptive, and if there were even a chance of that happening, it would seem to be hard to convince a registrant to make their business or whatever their activity run on a TLD that could be revoked if some guy fails a security audit or something like that. I could see perhaps wresting control away or sort of putting it into receivership or something like that, but the idea of the TLD just goes away sounds a little silly, for lack of a better word, to me. So,
what's that? It's an optional program, right?
It's an optional program, right? So I'd be surprised if you take. So that's to the group.
Yeah, I can. This is Andy. I can take a quick stab at just a quick response there, and Mike, please join in if you need. That's I think one of the reasons that we keep saying that there are two different types of things that can happen. So either the report card reflecting a red or the certification being taken away versus any type of other action, and that's sort of the group is gravitating toward the red and the report card or the removal of the cert for reasons just like that. Actually, that's very well stated. So I think that sort of represents current thinking, but again, you know, we're still very much in draft about how those mechanics might go forward.
Okay, we'll go to Mikey O'Connor, then Michael Pelage, and then Jonathan Frakes is also in the queue. Mikey?
Okay, so this is Mikey again, and I'm going to just rant a little bit. Let's say that I'm a registrant, and I'm building my business around a domain in a high-security TLD, and the high-security TLD gets a red mark. And presumably the reason it gets a red mark is so that the whole galaxy knows that the TLD is somehow insecure. And yet the reason I put all my money into a domain in this high security TLD is so that somehow somebody thinks that this is better. There are some fundamental kind of basic flaws in the logic of this. One of the things that the group has a lot of thinking yet to do is the scope of who's going to be under the mandate of this thing. We've talked a lot about registries, yeah, and clearly that's the case. We've talked a lot about registrars, yeah, I think that's probably right. But one of the things that snuck into this draft right towards the end is registrants. Well, that is far from baked. This, you know, I cannot stress enough to people, for those of you who are hearing this for the first time, if some of this is starting to sound a little nuts to you, please join up for this work group, because there are some things here that we need to sort through that we have not. And I want to make clear that when Andy says, well, that's why we're gravitating towards blah, there are some of us who are saying, this is a non-starter. So that's my rant. And I'm done now.
Thanks, Mikey.
Mikey, it's Andy, and just so to reiterate that, I'm trying as much as I can to use the language of very much in draft, you know, just discussing and so forth, to drive that point home. I mean, as Mikey's been raising, and this is very true, we are very much in development, and really nothing has been solidified yet, just options and development. So to reiterate, Mikey is absolutely correct.
Well, but Andy, just to follow up, one of the things that's got to be made clear to people is that when you did the pitch in the PowerPoint, one of the things you said is, well, we're headed for getting this into the DAG. Well, maybe we're getting this into the DAG, but maybe not, because maybe this isn't viable. Or maybe what we ought to do is chase down something like what Rick was suggesting earlier, which is there are lots of folks out there that do security certification, like PCI, and, you know, on the chat, I think Michaela raised the point of, you know, U.S.-centric stuff. I mean, there's so many things to figure out here, and I just want to make it clear to people who are coming into this for the first time that we have a lot of work to do and that we are far from consensus on this.
Thanks, Mikey. So we'll go to Michael Pelage, and then there's an individual from SOCA, if I'm saying that properly, then on to Jonathan, and then on to Evan. So, Michael Pelage, you have the floor.
Thank you, Craig. Rick, to address your question about what would the measures be if a registry was found to be in violation, I agree with you. It would be very draconian to take down a whole TLD. To perhaps put this discussion in a more timely framework for discussion, this week ICANN posted for consideration the .pro registry agreement. So this is a renewal of the .pro agreement. Now, the original agreement was entered into as part of the 2000 proof of concept, and one of the representations made by the registry operator at that time was that every registrant would be required to have a digital certificate that would be periodically re-verified. In this updated contract, the registry operator is asking for that requirement to be eliminated. So I think one of the things that we as a group have kind of struggled with is if this is voluntary, is it mandatory, will this somehow be incorporated into the DAG to give an applicant a potential leg up or a benefit over competing things? These are some of the things that we have, I think, discussed at a high level. But again, what's very interesting here is with the pro agreement, what happens when someone represents something but at a little later point in time is proposing to remove that? And again, this is a contract, a bilateral contract that was at least initially negotiated between ICANN staff and the registry operator, but which is now out for public comment before approval. So perhaps that gives a little more flavor to this discussion, as opposed to the more draconian, we're going to take down the TLD. I think with what we're talking about here, this is more representative of the issues we've been looking at.
I think we've got a direct response here from what Rick Wilhelm to Mike comment.
Yeah, just a quick one, Mike. I'd offer that the pro example is what happens when theory meets practice, right? So the pro stuff that ran great on a whiteboard, and that not operationally, but the business model thing. And then so then what happened there is that the pro team sort of ran into the reality of the marketplace, and so they were really looking at their business, and that's sort of I would guess what prompted some of these changes, tweaks to their model. However it might be described, I don't exactly recall the pro model verbatim.
Yeah, and this is Craig, just to chime in on Rick's comment about .pro. The existing registry agreement requires that digital certificates be made available to registrants by registrars. Whether or not registrants actually chose to take advantage of that is another story. And if you look at the history of the 40 or so thousand domain names in the .pro TLD, what we've found is that less than 200 registrants have ever taken advantage of that digital certificate requirement. So to require a registry, whether it's .pro or some other TLD, to make something available that the community is not participating in at significant administrative and financial burden just does not seem to make sense. And I'm not here to advocate one way or the other. I'm just kind of pointing out the clarity around what the current agreement says and why they have requested the change that they have.
And Craig, just if I could follow up, I'm not advocating against the .pro agreement. I'm just using that as a frame of reference for the discussion of what happens when these programs may go from voluntary to a potential mandatory aspect. And you know, does this potentially get hard coded in? While I appreciate the comments that BITS has made and the potential appropriateness of heightened security in connection with certain classes of TLDs, I'm finding that hard to reconcile based upon what I heard during the public forum earlier today, in which I would say there was an aversion towards additional classifications of TLDs. So, again, I would agree with both Craig Wilhelm and as well as you. They tried something. It didn't work. They're responding to you know, market conditions and trying to make the TLD viable, and I think that's appropriate. But we need to figure out how our actions in connection with this program may impact those TLDs in the marketplace.
Thanks, Mike. I'd like to just kind of refresh the queue here so folks know who's on next. We've got the individual in the room from SOCA, and we've got Jonathan Frakes, Evan Leibovich, and Eric Bruner Williams. So could the SOCA individual please step up to the mic?
Hello. That's better. Hello, my name's Paul Hall. I'm head of operations for the Serious Organised Crime Agency e-crime unit in the UK. I'd just like to say I very much welcome this initiative and the work that the working group's done already, and we support the general principles that have been laid out. Hope that the issues can be ironed out and this can be implemented fairly swiftly. What I would say, and I don't want to belabor the point about takedowns, certainly when I'm talking about takedowns, I'm talking about names rather than TLDs, which I think there's a little confusion coming to the conversation here about the takedown of TLDs. I don't think that was ever the intention of people in this room to discuss that. But organized crime, we have certainly seen, is very aware of internet infrastructure and process and will exploit this if it gets the opportunity. I just want to follow up on Evan's point about there needing to be a rapid takedown process across the whole sector for any particular domain that may get the high trust that this will offer, which will then be proved to be used for criminal purpose. There are inherent dangers, obviously, in a domain name being used for criminal purpose and being in the high trust zone. So I think that's something that the working group just needs to take into account. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. And for Craig and Andy, this is Greg. I am back in the room. Do we have any more questions here in Nairobi? I think we're done here in Nairobi in the chat room.
Yeah, we have a few working right now. Jonathan Frakes is up next.
I don't mind stepping back. I'll do it. So the concept of a voluntary program really came up because there is no concept right now. Lee, I think, made a very good point, and I know that we have Paul Smoser on the advisory group, but there isn't a concept of a financial TLD right now, and there's no gauge by which to measure what that is. The only thought that came to my mind as far as how we could somehow assess that might be to capture, you know, perhaps in the EOI there might be a question that is, I'd like to volunteer for a higher level of security for my zone as part of what I do. I think the net product of that is we could gauge what, if any, interest in a voluntary program might exist so that we could merit further work by this great group of volunteers who have invested a significant amount of time. And though we have some slight areas of commonality, come up with at best a voluntary program that we have some further work to do. It might help to kind of quantify things and keep things on track with respect to the other timelines that are involved in what everybody's working in a greater span of ICANN. That's all I wanted to say.
Thanks, Jonathan. Can we move on to Evan Leibovich?
Yeah, I just wanted to first, about the issue of the needs of registrants being tacked on at the last second, I don't like having it characterized that way. I think it's as important a part of the program as anything else, and I really hope that the people involved in this in this effort really consider that? As far as the issue of mandatory or voluntary, can we not really decide on that and move on? This thing has been bandied around since we started this. Can we not get at least some consensus on a couple of first principles? Because it's going to be really, really hard to move this on. We've made, at least in my mind, surprisingly little progress in some very important things. Andy, you've done a phenomenal job on the controls and the objectives, but there's a lot of really, really important things that need to be done, and they've been happening at a glacial pace. And I really am concerned about my friend from SOCA is wanting to do something quickly. At the rate we're going, we're going to have a hard time coming up with something, and I really wish we could at least be on the same side on some really core first principles.
With respect to voluntary or mandatory, you know, we have taken polls amongst the group and have found fairly, if not entire, unanimity about the voluntary aspect of this program. That, I think, we have moved on past.
So why don't we move on?
If that's the case, then why are we still mentioning it?
I think one of the reasons it was introduced today is because Lee said that, in his opinion, he thought it might be for his customers' good to be mandatory. So, you know, and that's a constructive input. You know, what I said is, to me, the missing input here is more input from potential users and customers, if you will. And that's great input. But he did say, for his customers, mandatory might be good. So that's how it came back into the conversation today. And I think it underscores the fact that the level of security desired by different sets of customers is going to vary. And so don't get me wrong. I'm not saying this should be stopped. What I'm saying is we need to hear more from the people who are going to use this and what their actual specs and requirements are. That would be very helpful input to us.
Yeah, people from Ms. March, we're doing our best.
We all are.
So we should get back to the queue, and right now I have Eric Corona-Williams. If other folks would like to get into the queue, please raise your hand in the Adobe room, and we'll get you in order. You're up, Eric. Perhaps Eric is muted at the moment, but I know that he's interested in speaking, so when he comes off mute, we'll let him. Yuri, can you not hear us?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Can't hear Eric. Eric, are you there? Nice call for Eric.
There we go. I hear Eric.
I hear him on the phone.
Me neither.
You
hear
him in Adobe.
I hear you in Adobe.
Eric is talking through his computer into Adobe.
If you mute the phone.
We hear you speaking through Adobe, not through the phone bridge. Eric, it would help if you dialed in because I don't know.
We're trying to get Eric channeled into either the phone bridge or he may type his question in.
Okay, I'm reading his question. It says, 2 years, CORE has been working with
financial TLDs.
On financial TLDs up until recently.
Bank of A.
Bank of America.
Bank of America feedback has been, it's just rebranding.
oh, no, it's just rebranding, therefore we're not going to get involved. I mean, they're building their brand around com, sort of what I think he said. Yeah. Yes.
So they're not going to take and rebrand into a
.bank because they're working on .bankofamerica.com as their brand that they're building around.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Is that right, Eric?
I see Eric saying that
security is more than just a rebranding. Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Eric.
We have Steve Holston also here in Reston would like to get into the queue. Yuri, do you have anyone waiting in the queue in Nairobi?
No, we don't.
Okay, so I'm gonna turn the floor over to Steve Holston.
One of the things that we have talked a little bit about in the advisory group is the issue of cost, and we have not come to any consensus on that point either because divorcing what the program spec looks like from the cost to actually implement it or engineer it leads potentially down a challenging path. So security, everybody is for security, but what does security mean and what does it cost? If you want to secure a building, you can have armed guards outside, you can have other measures. If we're going to reach all the way out to registrants, in some ways it's the equivalent of having pat-down searches to people who want to enter the building or making them sign something or making them get background checks. There are all kinds of issues that we're trying to figure out, even in scoping what this might look like. And if it is a one-size-fits-all approach across all TLDs, it's hard to imagine that it would make sense to have the same level of security for banks that it would for a travel website of bed and breakfasts, for example. So that's a challenging issue that we have to still bandy about.
Hearing Greg, we have no further hands up here in Reston. And it looks like we're just about nearing the end of the 90-minute session. Do you have additional folks in the queue, either in Nairobi, or are there folks online that would like to have a moment to speak?
Craig, no one here in Nairobi, so if we don't see anybody come up online, I think I'll go ahead and conclude the session, but we'll give 30 seconds or so to see if anybody else pops up one last time. So it does not appear that anybody's popping up online. So I think we've had a very, full discussion. I thank everybody both here and remotely around the world that is participating in this session. This is exactly the type of, feedback and dialogue process that, serves the ICANN process generally and will certainly serve the efforts of this working group well. And for those people here in Nairobi, the meeting's starting to draw to a close. It'll be closed tomorrow, so travel safe. And for those of you around the world, thanks again for being up at some of the crazy hours in order to participate in this very important working group. So everybody, take care.
Thanks, everybody.